I've got my hot tea and I'm ready to do this. You know, actually, before we go into the episode, I was contemplating a catchphrase. I've been listening to a lot of True Crime Garage. And those guys, they have these little catchphrases. And maybe they overdo it a little bit, but I kind of like it. There's a little comfort to it. And there's something I said before that's been kind of running through my head. And I was like, maybe I can make that the catchphrase. Use it every once in a while. So use it sparingly. And the phrase is, strap that tea bag to your mug and let's get going. What I'm talking about is literally the hot tea that I have in my hand. I tie it to the handle of my mug. But then I realized that catchphrase is not going to be a good one because it can mean two things. One, what I'm talking about. And then tea bag means something else. And I thought that maybe I was mitigating that by using strap the tea bag to your mug. But then as I was walking in here right now, I remember that mug is a synonym for face. So not helping myself out. Not sure if that key phrase is going to stick around. Maybe. Anyhow, let's talk a little bit about Tim Ferriss. I say that like we're buddies. Let me tell you about my buddy Tim Ferriss. Now, earlier today, I was searching around, looking at, I always like to look at what other people are doing with their Patreons. Like, are they doing anything interesting that sounds fun to play around with? And one of the people I always go to investigate all things Patreon is Amanda Palmer. To me, Amanda Palmer is inseparable from the idea of Patreon because I learned about what Patreon was from Amanda Palmer. So I went over there and I was looking at her Patreon page and I found out that she has a podcast now. Shouldn't be too much of a surprise because I think eventually everybody's going to have a podcast. But her podcast is called The Art of Asking Everything. And, you know, I went through the archives and looked to see, is anybody in here I recognize that I want to hear the conversation with? And I saw that she had Tim Ferriss as a guest. And I clicked on it immediately because the last time that Amanda Palmer was on Tim Ferriss's podcast, they had a really extraordinary conversation where Amanda was just super open and bare and vulnerable, talking about what it was like to go through a miscarriage and everything associated with that and the many different directions, of course, that they went from there. But it was one of the best podcasts I've ever heard. So to see the two of them together again was an automatic click for me. And it was a good thing I did because we might not be having this episode if I hadn't listened to that. Because there's a little bit in there where they're talking about people talking shit to you online. You know, you're a creator, you're putting yourself out there and people attack you. And they were talking a little bit about what that experience was like. And they both agreed that the best way to look at that is it's kind of like a tax, that the percentage of people that will come after you for you just being you and doing what you're doing is a tax, that it's just something that it comes along with it. You know, I think Tim says, let's assume that 10% of people out there will take something that you do personally and they will attack you. Then it's a 10% tax. And it's not a side effect of the job. A lot of people like to think about it like that. Like, I make things. Unfortunately, along with that sometimes comes trolls. It's not a side effect. It's actually part of the job. It's built into what the job is. Putting things out publicly means being criticized. Period. It's part of it. And I zoomed in on that idea immediately because that idea of understanding the job, understanding what the actual job is, and understanding what's part of it is such a huge, huge piece of being able to actually accomplish things. There's an interview that I heard many years ago with the actress Ashley Williams on the podcast That One Audition with Alicia Oxy. And one of the things that Ashley Williams talks about in there is auditioning. Now, a lot of actors think auditioning is kind of a pain in the ass. Like, oh, I got to go audition. I got to go audition. And then what they're all trying to do is get to a place where they don't have to audition. You know, like, I'm Sean Penn. I want this part. Okay. You know, either he gets the part or he doesn't, but he doesn't have to go down there and audition. Let's see your chops, Penn. Can you act? What Ashley Williams said that I found really interesting, and I haven't forgotten, obviously, because it popped in my head today, was she said that for her, auditioning is part of the job. It's just the job. Everybody sees it as like this tack on, like the acting, just being on set is the job. Just having, as the lingo that they use, having something booked is the job. But that's only part of the job. Another part of the job is auditioning. And I never forgot that because there's something, I don't even know if I knew at the time why that was important to me, that I couldn't let it go. There's something important in that about framing. I talk about framing a lot because I think framing is 90% of the game when it comes to mindset. You know, if you look at things in a shitty way, guess what you get? Shitty results. You know that because we all experience it. So when you start to see part of the job as not part of the job, then it's really easy to get into that mindset, that this sucks mindset. There's a great little book that I think it's Kindle exclusive called The Dudes Abide. It's about the Coen brothers and the making of The Big Lebowski. It's written by Alex Belth, who was a production assistant on the film. And he talks about Jeff Bridges on the set. And this is what he says about Jeff Bridges. Most actors are trained in the theater and need a certain number of takes before they can deliver their best performance. Bridges, who grew up around a father who was in TV and movies, didn't need to build up his performance in each take. He simply was the dude and offered variations from take to take. He'd read a line and sound surprised or confused or irritated. He'd do something different physically, add a gesture or change an inflection. Occasionally, he changed the wording for the script. Like when he's summoned by the Big Lebowski, he says, "Mind if I do a J?" instead of "Mind if I smoke a J?" Bridges understood that he had limited control over his performance. His job was to give the boys as many options as possible. The framing of a job is everything. An actor can go in and have their script and say, this is exactly what it says. I'm going to do exactly what's on the paper, and I'm going to do it until I get the performance at its peak. That's one way to look at it. Jeff Bridges looks at it a different way. I'm going to do it this way. Then I'm going to try it this way. Then I'm going to try it this way. It's like improv almost. And it's actually something that comes up in that Ashley Williams interview that I mentioned earlier. She talks about working with Tom Cavanaugh on, I think it was like a Hallmark Christmas movie or something. And she talks about how he came into each take differently and how he was just kind of playing and having fun, and how that taught her for the first time, like, oh, you can have fun while you do this. There's a generosity to those perspectives. That I'm here to give you options is a different way to look at things. But oftentimes, when we think about, you know, auditioning, oh, auditioning, that's the crappy part of this job. Oh, auditioning, that's not part of the job. Or every time I put something out, people just rip into me on Twitter. There's a pretension to that perspective. When you think that those things are not part of your job, there's a pretension there. You're saying, I'm too good for that part. I'm too good to audition. I'm too good for people to attack me. Everybody should love me. Everybody should agree with everything I say. Tim mentions in the interview with Amanda Palmer something that Robert Rodriguez told him when he interviewed Rodriguez on his podcast. And he said that there was some new director and they were talking about movies. And he said, oh, and then it was awful. All this went wrong and this person didn't show up. And he was just kind of complaining. And Rodriguez just looked at him. He goes, Yeah, that's the job. Like, that is what being a director is. Directing. Like, part of directing chaos. That your job is to deal with problems. That's the job. And as a podcaster, it's really easy to get into that mindset of like, I'm too good for this. It doesn't start or it doesn't articulate itself in your head as I'm too good for this. It articulates itself as this sucks. I don't want to do this. For example, like all the work that I do in pre-production. I just did a few minutes ago, I did a Patreon extra explaining my pre-production process from idea into I'm ready to turn on the microphone. That's work. That's a lot of work. Post-production. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on after post-production, right? I'm recording this. After I'm done with this, I've got to take the file from the recorder, get it onto the computer. Then I have to wait for that to load in. Then I got to drop it into Logic. Then I go through and I edit. Find all the little rough spots. Oops, I coughed there. Let's take that out. I paused a little too long there. Let's shorten that a little bit. I made a mouth click noise there. Can I get rid of that? And then after that, I got to put it through the leveler. And then after that, I got to put it through the thing that turns it into an MP3. And then there's the uploading. There's all of this little stuff that looked at in the lens of doing just that one act suck. Like sitting and editing audio sucks. If you think about it only as sitting and editing audio. So most of us podcasters, what we think is, I got to get this show rolling. I got to get this monetized so that then I can pay for an editor. Then I can get an intern who can do this stuff. That's kind of like the path that some people are pushing. Like this is the way that you move through podcast success. But you're just offloading that stuff, saying that stuff, it's not part of your job. It's not part of my job. But as long as you continue to see that as not part of your job, it will continue to suck every time you do it. And I can get caught up in that too. I've been caught up in that so many times in the past. I was caught up in the whole get an editor thing. That was like the dream. You know, I talked about before putting the microphone and being able to look out the window. But there's also the, oh, it'd be cool if I had a recording studio and all I had to do was show up and sit down and talk into the microphone. And then somebody else took care of everything afterwards. It's a nice dream. But it's like cutting part of the job out. And I mean, what do I see my job as? I see my job as talking into a microphone, right? That's part of it. I think like in Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff's book, The Coddling of the American Mind, they talk about Socrates and they say that Socrates thought it was his job to sting, to disturb, to question, and thereby to provoke his fellow Athenians to think through their current beliefs and change the ones they could not defend. There's a part of me that thinks like, yeah, that's kind of like my job. I like to bring up things that provoke thought. But all that other shit, all the pre-production, all the post-production, the editing, the posting, the leveling, the EQing, the de-essing, that's part of my job too. It's not something that's different. That's part of it. One of the most difficult things that I've found as a podcaster is asking people to do things. For so long in my podcast, I would never say anything at the end. I would just end the podcast and there would be music. I wouldn't mention Patreon. I wouldn't tell people to follow me on social media. I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't ask for anything. I wouldn't do the rating, please rate and review us. I wouldn't do any of that. I didn't do any of it because it made me uncomfortable. But the truth is, that's part of the job too. Not being uncomfortable, but facing the discomfort is part of the job. Putting the episode together, doing the pre-production, trying to take this little spark of an idea and develop it and pull in different pieces so that I have something interesting to share every day is uncomfortable too, because it's work. And like, work is mostly uncomfortable because you're doing something and most of the time we think we just want to do nothing. But once you start working, you realize it's great. But that initial start to work is discomfort. So my job is to face that discomfort. Sometimes you have to suck it up. That's actually a great chapter in Guy Kawasaki's book, Enchantment. And in this chapter, it's a section. He talks about an interview with Stephen Jay Kanell. And Stephen Jay Kanell is a TV producer. He was kind of the man in the 80s when it came to TV. He created shows like The A-Team, The Greatest American Hero, The Commish, 21 Jump Street, Silk Stockings, and another show called Rockford Files. And that's what Kawasaki is talking about, or what he's taking from an interview with Stephen J. Kanell. But what he's talking about here is who James Gardner is as an actor. James Gardner played Jim Rockford. You might remember him from Maverick, both the TV show and the movie with Mel Gibson. And he was in The Notebook. So here's what Stephen Kanell had to say about James Gardner. There were occasions when I sent a script down to him that I didn't think was the best script that we'd ever shot, and I'd never hear from him. A lot of other actors I worked with over the years would call me up and say, "Hey, I don't think this is a very good script. We need to do this, this, and this." Never a word from Jim. Nothing. He'd just do it. So I started to think that he didn't see that it wasn't a good script. Once we were at a wrap party at the end of a season, and one of those weak sister scripts came up, Jim wagged his finger at me and said, "Not one of your better efforts, Steve." So I said, "Okay, let me ask you a question. Why don't I ever hear from you when you don't like the scripts?" He said, "I'll tell you exactly why. I trust you, and I trust Juanita, and I trust David Chase. And I know if you send me a script that isn't quite up to what we're used to doing, it's because it's the best you can do that week, given the pressures that are on you. And if I spin you guys all around and force you to rewrite it, I'm going to turn one bad script into four bad scripts. So that's the time the acting department has to step up and really kick some ass. We have to step up and really make the stuff work. We have to look for more motivation to make comedy where I don't see it on the page and try to make it go past the audience without them seeing that it wasn't that good of a story." And I love that. I love that. Like, he understands, Kanell was a writer at this time, not a producer. He understands what the writer's job is and what it's like. Like, you got to write a TV script in a week. It's a lot of pressure. Like, Kanell goes on to say, you can't, when you're putting on as many episodes as we were at the speed that we were putting them out, they're not all going to be great. Some of them are going to be stinkers. But instead of just dealing with that or complaining about that, being like, "This isn't my job. You gave me a crappy script." Gardner just sucked it up. "Well, this is the best they can do. I can do better. I can make this work." And I think that's really powerful because, like I said, all of that little shit is your job. Making the script work is your job. Auditioning is your job. It's part of it. Dealing with the chaos is part of it. Dealing with the attacks is part of it. Once you accept that, you can stop thinking about it. It's weird. It's this weird transformation that happens, like literally, like with the editing. I used to complain about editing all the time. And then at a certain point, I just stopped complaining about it. And the moment I stopped complaining about it and just like, this is the way it goes, this is how I do it, I literally don't think about it anymore. That's part of the reason that I do things the way that I do, where I record this episode, I move the file over and I edit immediately. I don't put things off for 6 months. I don't put things off for a week. I don't put things off even for a day. I get it done all in one action because I can see that as one job. I don't think my job, when I get in front of this microphone, I don't think my job is to record this and then do all the other stuff. You want to know what I think my job is? Pull the idea together, make your notes, then record it, then edit, then post. That's all my job, and it's all one job. And I do it all in a row. I prep my notes. I've got ideas running through my head and notes that I'm writing all over the place throughout the day, but I prep my notes right before I record so that it's fresh. It's all one action because that's my job. My job is not to talk into the microphone. That's part of it. My job isn't to make people think. That's part of it. My job is start to finish to make an episode. That's it. Everything else that goes into that, all the little pieces, is part of it. A car is not a car if it's missing a wheel. You know, it's not going to go anywhere. A car isn't a car without the steering wheel or without the gas pedal. You know, it can't do its job. All the little pieces matter. One little bolt from the engine might make it blow up. Cal Newport says in his book, So Good They Can't Ignore You, there's something liberating about the craftsman mindset. It asks you to leave behind self-centered concerns about whether your job is, quote, just right, and instead put your head down and plug away at getting really damn good. No one allows you a great career, it argues. You need to earn it, and the process won't be easy. Your job is to work. That's not from him. That's me, that last part. Your job is to work. That's the craftsman mindset. This is part of my job. This whole thing. This is part of my job. Let's go back to Tim Ferriss and Amanda Palmer. This idea of putting things out publicly and being criticized. Well, one of the things that's interesting about what I do, or like what an actor does, anybody that works in what can be considered art or entertainment or the arts, whichever those words you prefer. Julia Cameron says in The Artist's Way, many of us equate difficulty with virtue, art with fooling around. So sometimes you can get criticized online for talking about, oh, I'm doing all this work and all this work. And people are going, what work are you doing? Like, you're just turning on a microphone. Like, there's no work to that. Come on now. You're just showing up and acting in front of a camera. There's no work to that. You're just writing words on a piece of paper. There's no work to that. But as Victor Hugo said, one is not idle because one is absorbed. There is both visible and invisible labor. To contemplate is to toil. To think is to do. Because as a writer, you will get shit for calling something work. Because people will come in the room and what do they see? They see the invisible labor. They see someone staring at the wall. But someone who is staring at the wall isn't doing nothing. They're contemplating something. They're figuring something out. They're doing mental labor. And so much of acting is invisible labor. We see the final takes. We don't see the multiple hours of standing around while people move lights and move sets so that you can deliver a line, wait for the camera to move to a different position, deliver the same line, deliver it again. Okay, now we got the take we want. Put the camera over there. Let's do it one more time, except let's, okay, can you do it a little happier? All of that's invisible labor because we don't see it. So actors are just, they're having fun, right? They're just on set having a blast. I've been on sets. It's hard work. It's exhausting. Hurry up and wait. Hurry up and wait. Same thing when I was a caterer, we would do the same thing. We'd hurry up, got to be there on time. Okay, we're here on time. Now we have to wait 30 minutes before we can set the tables. Hurry up and wait. It's this invisible labor. People would walk into the kitchen and see us all in the kitchen, just kind of hanging out, talking to each other, eating, smoking cigarettes. And think, these guys aren't working. Yeah, we are. Part of our work is to wait until we can do the thing we can do, because everything has to happen in time when it comes with catering. So you hurry, hurry, hurry and set the tables. And then you sit around and you wait until it's time to eat. And then hurry, 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 hurry. Get everything out to the tables. Get everything out. Serve that whole table at the same time. And then you sit and wait for them to eat. And then hurry, hurry, hurry. Bus all the tables. It's start and stop. Invisible labors. And it's the same with podcasting. People think, oh, maybe. People think podcasters just turn on a microphone and talk. But all the stuff we do before, all the stuff we have to do afterwards, no one ever sees. But here's the funny thing. That's okay. If people think what you're doing is easy, you're doing your job. You're doing it right. There's an interesting article I just read by David Perrell the other day called Hide Your Work. And one of the things he talks about in there is the idea of writing something that feels easy for people to read. He says, your work is done when it looks so simple that the consumer thinks that they could have done it, which means they won't appreciate how hard you worked. And that's the biggest part of the job, is not getting credit for the invisible labors. Doing the invisible labors, but not getting credit for it. Seth Godin talks all the time about his writing and says that he wants basically people to read the stuff he writes and go, yeah, that seems obvious. He feels like he's done his job if he points out something that people think is obvious that they had just never thought before. You're not going to get credit for that stuff. That's part of the job. Part of the job is doing things that nobody will ever see. How many writers take things and throw them away? The novelist Philip Roth would say he said he wrote on average 200 pages before he'd actually get to where he started the novel. And those 200 pages he would throw away. They were just what he needed to get to where the story started. And it's thrown away. He doesn't get credit for those 200 pages. He only gets credit for the book. There's a story of Picasso that may be apocryphal. It may not have ever happened. But graphic designers in particular love this story. Picasso's in a restaurant and a woman comes up to him and asks him, oh my God, you're Pablo Picasso, aren't you? And he says, yes, I'm Pablo Picasso. She says, would you please draw something on this napkin for me? So he takes the napkin and he just does a quick little squiggle. And then he hands it to the woman and says, that will be $10,000. She says, what? You just did that in like 30 seconds. And Picasso says, no, that took me 40 years to do. That's the invisible labor of the artist. That's why paintings are so expensive. You don't pay for the paint. You don't pay for just the paint on the canvas. You don't pay just for the time that it took to paint that one particular painting. You're also paying for the time it took for the painter to get good enough for you to want their painting. It goes back in a way to yesterday's episode where I talked about, actually that wasn't yesterday, 2 days ago, copyright episode where I talked about the original person with an original idea. They sell it, they have to charge for the manufacturing and for the time of development. But the copier, who spends no time developing, only has to charge for the manufacturing. So they always price out the original, because the development is an invisible labor, but without it, there would be no product. Because the copier can make nothing without the person who originally invents it. And the original person to invent it needs the time to develop it. And that's valuable. So as always with these episodes, I like to recommend something from the archives. I just did. If you didn't listen to the copyright episode, why don't you go back and listen to the copyright episode? Because whenever you talk about art, we talked about a lot of art in this. It's good to understand how messed up American copyright is. And if you guys want to support this podcast, yes, this is the part where I get to face the uncomfortable. please come and become a patron. Not only because I would like to be able to pay my medical insurance every month, but because I'm really loving the Discord app, and I would love to have people to be able to make a Discord server and chat with. So you have to be there. People have to be there for that to happen. So go over to patreon.com/Chad Hall and become a patron. There's two levels. I kept it easy, kept it simple. Both levels get the same thing. You're both going to be able to hear the short little Patreon extra I did before this about my pre-production process. It's just a choice about which amount fits your budget. But everybody gets the same thing. Simple, straightforward. You can also go to the Lend a Hand page on my website, where there are 9 other ways you can help the show, including the one that I mentioned earlier. Rate and review this podcast. I know it doesn't do much in the algorithm. I'm not going to lie like most podcasters do, or maybe they're not lying. Maybe they actually believe it. But it does look nice to see that people actually like a show. So then when somebody clicks on it, they go, people like this show. And I'm trying out a new podcast website. I'm using Podpages for a little while, see how that works out. And that displays the reviews all across the bottom. And my most recent review, I'm embarrassed to say, was from 2 years ago. Probably the last time I asked people to rate and review the show. And also, if you're listening in Overcast, your little like, your star on episodes is really important. The bulk of my audience is on Overcast. So if I could chart in the arts, that would be really cool. And I put out enough episodes. Man, if you guys liked every episode, I would chart. So those would be really helpful ways if you don't have the money to become a patron. And now that I have faced the discomfort, I have done this part of my job. My tea is now drinkable. And I'm going to end this so that I can edit it and post it up. Oh, before I leave, actually, one other thing. You're probably aware of this if you're in America, but I have listeners in India. I have listeners in many other countries. So for all of you who don't know this, today's the 23rd. In 2 days is Christmas. So tomorrow's Christmas Eve. I'm not going to record an episode on Christmas Eve, and I'm not going to record an episode on Christmas. What I am going to do is tomorrow, I'm going to post an episode that I originally made as a Patreon extra before I really started putting so many episodes into the public feed. And now I've listened to that episode and I think it deserves to be in the public feed. It's my thoughts after watching the movie I, Tonya. So that will show up for all of you on Christmas morning. And then I think maybe I might have a Christmas present the next day. So until the holidays are over, which 2 days. Merry Christmas, happy holiday, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. If you celebrate none of them, be glad that we're almost out of 2020. So thank you all for listening. I don't say that often enough. Thank you. I'm grateful for you and happy holidays.